Andre, let's start with the conflict in the Middle East between Iran and Israel. In your opinion, what's going on there and why the Israelis decided to do that? Is there any time anything good coming out of this for Israel?
As I stressed many times, I'm not really the scholar on the region, so I usually defer to people who do understand more on that issue than me. But judging by the words of Mr. Medvedev today, who said that, yeah, the war is coming, the regional war. And so what can I say? I understand that there are now the air alarms, sirens all over Israel. So I assume Iran will be retaliating, although the facts of the assassination of this Hamas guy, evidently it was some kind of the explosive device which was placed in this his residence, which he lived many times, and it was placed by somebody obviously who got inside, which, by the way, it's an egg on the face of the Iranian special services. And especially when you have this tension, why would you go back over and over again to the same place? So then we have this, and this is of course the terrorist act, no matter how you put it. So, and we have to wait and see what's going to happen. And in terms of Israel trying to engage United States in war against Iran, there are all kinds of the conflicting messages coming from United States. But even Jeffrey Sachs yesterday or 2 days ago at Judge Napolitano absolutely stated that Israel runs the United States, essentially, including its foreign policy. So I will not be surprised that United States one at some point of time will get involved kinetically, so to speak. But we have the situation with Russia, which will not allow Iran to be damaged beyond the point of no return. So we'll see. But it's primarily regional. I don't think so it will go global, especially after yesterday, Russian Foreign Ministry clarified the situation about this so-called mysterious call of Mr. Belousov, Defense Minister, to speaking to Lloyd Austin. So in this case, what can I say? We'll have to wait and see.
We've learned that in Wall Street Journal, they're talking about that U.S. intelligence fears that Russia may transfer anti-ship missiles to the Houthis. And do you think that would be possible in this escalation that is happening right now?
I don't think so. Russians will transfer. There is Iran. Iran is the backer of Houthis. This is not to say the Russians have a huge, concert with Houthis or like them, to put it mildly. These are fundamentalist Islamic group, and there's some issues. But what Russia can do, there is a very famous anecdote in Russia. Hello, Houthis. Well, but we're not Houthis, we are Chechens. No, now you are, So it's, there could be obviously some transfer, technology transfer, and they have the reasons to be afraid. But Russia can always transfer it to Iran. And plus, Iran makes their own anti-shipping missiles. So who knows? They might provide them.
Yeah, before this assassination in Iran, Turkey was talking about, let's call it Turkey, was talking about invading Israel. And do you think that this assassination would bring Turkey to a greater aggressive attitude toward Israel?
No, it's all hot air by Erdogan. He can stop it very fast. Just shut down the oil, and that's it. So, but now it's classic Erdogan, multi-vector, so to speak, multi-chair. So yeah, but yeah, he needs to placate his constituency, his electorate, and he's have to make those aggressive has to make those aggressive statements against Israel, but nothing gonna happen, I don't think so.
Yeah. Andre, when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine right now, we had this exchange of prisoners between Russia and the United States. How important is this for the conflict in Ukraine? Does it mean anything in bringing down the escalation in that region?
No, I don't think so. The exchange of prisoners is the standard practice. And there was a Russians, for example, they never stop in trying to return those people. Some of them, possibly their cadre intelligence officers, like this guy in, for example, Berlin, who killed this, I mean, basically bestial, murderous guy, terrorist from Chechnya. So Russia never stops, those attempts to return her people back to motherland. So, and yeah, it's pretty standard in many respects. It's just that it makes so much, headlines, so many headlines, obviously against the backdrop of this tremendous tension. But that's, as I already stated, that's why Belousov called Austin. And it was to stern warning, because Russians do not buy this thing that, oh yeah, United States is in no way, involved in some kind of the operations by the Ukrainian side. United States runs most of these operations. So the Russians don't buy this BS, essentially, So, and it was to warn United States that it will go beyond Ukraine, if whatever was, conceived by that time by the United States will be, occurring, whatever the operation. So, and that's a, well, it's a good gesture, on part of both sides. But no, it's not diminishing tensions in any way, because United States is totally invested, and it is now desperate, obviously. It needs some kind of way out, some kind of off ramp. But I don't know. It's yeah, there's so much going on simultaneously in the world right now that it's very difficult to put this together, as the unified picture. I try, but that's so far what I can tell you about this specific exchange.
Yeah. Are Ukrainians getting F-16s? It seems that they're getting them right now as we talk.
Makes no difference whatsoever. It's
But
just that somebody in Russian either air defense or air force will become much richer by $170,000. They're all lining up now. Who will be the first who will shut this thing down? But yeah, it makes no difference.
It means politically, Andrei, when you send a weapon that is capable of carrying nuclear bombs, it's a huge message to your rival, to your opponent. And how, in your opinion, how Russia see these type of activities on the part of the United States, each and every time they're trying to escalate the situation in order to, I don't know if the main goal is to help Ukrainians, but at the end of the day, these are huge messages to Russia.
No, not really. First, nobody in their own mind, even the most pathetic losers in Washington, who are desperate, and even neocons, some of them are actually suicidal now, but apart from being homicidal. But the point is that obviously the only nuclear deterrent which exists in Europe, it is obviously American free-falling bombs, B-61s. And these are, they call gravity bombs, but they're essentially free-falling bombs. And obviously nobody gets hands on them except for the United States. And there are some, air-to-ground missiles with a very limited range, which French have. Others, they have no access to these weapons. And the fact that F-16 can carry their, nuclear bomb or whatever. So yeah, sure, most of those planes, F-35 can carry it, you know, F-15s can carry them and what have you. So it's no, it's pretty much there primarily for the media, you know, spin. But reality, of course, that's not an escalation. The whole F-16 thing was going on for a while now, actually since 2023. What is known that it is Netherlands, I believe, which transferred them. And Denmark allegedly so is going to do so. They know that the number, as even Ukrainians themselves say, very limited. So yeah, judging by the also news from Romania when they were training those Ukrainian pilots for F-16s. Even Romanians do not have a very high opinion about them. Do not forget, they're practically all best pilots. The core of the pilots, which Ukrainian Air Force had, has been killed. It has been shut down. So they have very much probably some fresh, what have you, you know, guys with the very limited education. And yeah, they have issues with, you know, English language. Evidently, there are rumors, not rumors, there are actually facts that even Romanians report they are constantly drunk. And, you know, so out of those 50 people, they said about three of them are more or less capable of anything like takeoff, you know. So I wouldn't stress this too much. I mean, it's just another plane which will be shut down. Russians demonstrated it a few days ago with the R-37M missile, setting yet another record, 213 kilometers range, shut down the Su-27, one of the last remaining of Ukrainian air forces. So yeah, that's what is expected.
Yeah. Bloomberg reported that the United States is going to deploy devices to jam Russian and Chinese satellites. Do you think that they're afraid of the intelligence that they're providing to Iran and Hezbollah, or their major concern is Ukraine and Taiwan right now?
Well, what I think they're talking about jamming and all that, is the fact that the only real jamming which they can do, otherwise that will be considered their hostile act and even casus belli, is jam the signal, not satellites. The jam a signal of GLONASS. GLONASS is used. They say it's equivalent. It is equivalent. It's as good as GPS. GLONASS is Russian satellite navigational system. And Bloomberg, which has no military specialists among them, and those who advise them also are not real military specialists. So they will be jamming most likely the signal of GLONASS, because GLONASS is the one of the corrections, or what is the, you know, updates or mid-flight or whatever the updates for the inertial navigational systems for the cruise missiles and things of this nature. So, but then again, you know, it's just to spin something to demonstrate that, yeah, we're doing something. What they don't understand, there will be also Russian electronic warfare capabilities are not arguably, they are the best in the world. So they will try to jam, they will be jammed back, you know. So it's all about this. If they start jamming, whatever that means, satellites in the orbit, especially anything related to the Sirius, navigation, which, by the way, Russians use all over Russia. It will be the same as Russia comes in and starts jamming GPS signal on the territory of the United States. That's casus belli. You know, it begins to jam satellites of the GPS constellation. So Bloomberg doesn't know, which is total normal for them. They have no clue what they're writing about. But yes, it is possible that they will be try to jam GLONASS signal.
Yeah. How do you find right now the situation in Ukraine on the battlefield? They're talking about 100 and 200 or 200 men and women to be conscripted for the conflict. Do you think, are they still hoping that they can gain anything on the battlefield?
No. I mean, the hoi polloi, so to speak, Ukrainian, these recruits, some of them fight because they think that indeed there's those, Russian Mordor, all those hordes of Russians coming to take away their, hard-earned toilets, and refrigerators and microwaves. And I'm not exaggerating here. I'm not embellishing anything. They really think so. They really think Russians actually are hungry people, live in the despicable conditions, and most they go out into the outhouses. And so that's pretty much what CIA and London, probably projecting themselves, of their future, did brainwashing them. So, and some of them, fight as the real articles, genuine articles. But other than that, it's don't forget about the barrier troops, which are primarily Americans, Polish, British, because they really do not have the guts to fight and face the real war. So they shoot them in the backs once they try to surrender. So that's how it works. And the point is that when you look at the statistics from the battlefield, and you even begin to look at the maps a little bit, there is steady movement along the whole front. You have everyday gains of 2, 3, 5 kilometers, So Russians already fight in the center of New York, no less. And guess what? Which is Toretsk, Russians are already in Toretsk, already on the fringes of the town. And once Toretsk falls, well, that's pretty much, it's huge loss. So every day, some new village, some new town is liberated, and that's what is happening. So they literally do not have the reserves to hold on to whatever they have there. Armed forces of Ukraine. And granted, the level of the American operational planners, it's not surprising, so they don't understand what they're dealing with.
Can you understand what the United States is doing right now in Norway, in the northern part of Norway, near the border to Russia? Why they're providing a lot of weapons to them, in your opinion?
Oh, no, it's NATO member. That's the only thing United States can do, frankly, militarily, to bluff, to show some, B-52s flying around the borders. Russians do the same. They just fly kind of in response. But the point is that's the only thing they can do. And again, you have to understand, it could be stated very clearly, especially after I read yet another report on how situation is bad, which it is, with the US military. They do not have really a real strategist. They still exercise this delusion, which it is delusional. I mean, when you look at the American military history and how they plan, they lose all their wars, okay? So, and they believe that, oh, you can still kind of, restrain the possible war to Europe. You can literally do this isolated, huge conflict, however, and that the United States will do yet another World War II trick. Evidently, those people in Pentagon and those people in the RAND or National Security Council, they have no idea what they're dealing with. And I actually did today in my video, even if to pretend that somehow they will be able to create the conditions for the major war in Europe, even if it goes conventional, which I don't believe in, United States is nuclear biased nation. They will go nuclear immediately because conventionally it is extremely weak armed force. U.S. Army is a weak army. And so when you go and look about this, just say, okay, there is a war. Okay, Russian hordes of those, Mordor people try to invade Poland, bomb Poland. They do not understand even meaning of the modern long range fires. So, because Russia can conventionally, that means without nuclear weapons, reach practically any industrial center in the continental United States. United States cannot do the same against Russia. And this is what those people do not understand. They have no concept of what long-range fires are, the concept of the modern 21st centuries. And when you when you look at their basically it's US the proper air defense, it's nothing. It's just incapable to intercept any modern missile. And so what can I say? When you talk about the fact that, for example, Russia already has in serial production, which is KHBD, which is the long, extreme long-range cruise missile, which has the range of 8,000 plus kilometers. What are you going to do? United States doesn't even have anything comparable. Russians have this. They have that on their ships. They have their latest 3M14M calibers with 4,500 kilometer range. So there you go. And that's what is this all about. They try to place those non-existent weapons like, you know, this long-range hypersonic weapon by 2026. Sure. By that time, what do you expect? But in reality is that once it starts to fly, United States will go nuclear because it will not be able to win any conventional war in Europe, period.
I think that's why Pentagon is talking about that the United States believes it must prepare for a scenario in which restrictions on nuclear arsenals disappear altogether. Andre, this is huge. If it goes nuclear, nobody can survive a nuclear war.
No. No, absolutely, it would be a catastrophe. But again, do not forget, a lot what Pentagon does, it's like they write their own military history. They confabulate things, you know, that like, you know, United States defeated Hitler, you know, General Patton is the greatest. So basically fantasies, you know. But the point is that they cannot even compete in the nuclear arms race anymore. And what many people do not understand, apart from the issues of which are, of course, related to the fission material and United States not having the good access to those things, you know, and nobody knows how, you know, viable a U.S. Nuclear deterrent is. You look at the Minuteman III, which are, you know, very soon will be 50 years old technology. You look at the Trident 2D5, which is have been around for more than 30 plus years. So, and it's about delivery systems. And here is it's really, you know, Polichinello's secret. United States lost the arms race in the delivery systems. It's just simply like that. I mean, and there is nothing which is comparable to Russian, whatever, RS-28 Sarmat or Bulava, versions of Bulava are capable of carrying all the avant-garde hypersonic light vehicles. Sarmat can carry up to 12, I believe, there in a single go. So, and this, those have no, they basically have their, no limits for their range. They literally can fly around the Earth. And when you look at those things, and when you look at especially all the intermediate range weapons, they have nothing what they can really offer, so to speak, as a resistance. That is why they want to start talking about START treaty. Russians said, we're not interested. To discuss what? It's like, you know what, people on the motorbike trying to trade with the guy who rides Rolls Royce, you know? So no matter what kind of, how can you make any agreement? United States wants to trade something which it doesn't have and will not have for long years against what Russians already have on the front line. Not IOC, not initial operation capability. They have those things on the front line. RS-28 is in the serial production. I mean, the Sarmat, all avant-gardes are on the combat duty since 2018. All those hypersonic weapons are already used in the combat, you know, under combat conditions. So, yeah, where do you go from here? What are you going to give, you know, so to speak? Because the all agreements are always about give and take, you know, how we trade, how we settle on things. I mean, United States will not be able to close this gap. Probably ever.
Do we know what the government in Ukraine wants right now? Do they, at some moment, we perceive that they want some sort of negotiation? On the other hand, they're talking about the continuation of the conflict. What's going on in Ukraine right now, in your opinion?
First, we need to start what is going on with the United States, which is ungovernable because it doesn't really have acting president. It's just run by the clique of the, you know, those Ivy League boys and girls who never held a real job in their life, let alone understood, you know, what they're dealing in a global sense. So the same goes for Ukraine. Zelensky, well, he wants to leave, I guess. He stole so much money that he thinks that there is some way he can actually, you know, retire in safety, which is, of course, delusion. But the point is that he will say whatever is expedient, you know, at any particular moment. Today he wants negotiations, tomorrow he doesn't. Now he talks about that we can hold the referendum without Russians leaving the territories which Russia captured and things of this nature. It's all garbage. It is all, again, he is a puppet. All decisions are made in Washington, D.C. All of them, including, yeah, killing of Russian civilians. You know, they are impotent, they are desperate, and they're sore losers. So they would like to kill more Russians, you know. So, and when you look at this, what can I say? It's just PR, pure PR. Russians are on record. We are ready to negotiate, but also when we understand what is going on the ground. And what is going on the ground, which is today's reports, yeah, it's a collapse of the front. So,
how about the Biden administration right now? Who's running the show, Andre, in the United States? Biden just disappeared from the scene.
Yeah, he is, well, let's be frank. The guy didn't run anything. He couldn't remember himself, okay? So, and who he was. And so it was a pure and simple abuse of the senior citizen. I may not like the guy. I think he is a pervert and he is the worst US president United States ever had. But he is so demented that obviously it was pure abuse. So the United States is run today by the, as I already stated, the clique of those, you know, hires like Sullivan or Blinken, people who, again, Austin, I won't allow them to mow the lawn in the front of my house. They give them 7-Eleven store, they will bankrupt it in a week. These are people who literally have no real competences. Nothing. They don't have educational background. Political science is not science. It's garbage, basically, you know. So, and when you look at these things, so what do you expect? It is completely dysfunctional country right now. Obviously, what is happening, we are facing there. Well, it's probably the most crucial situation with the United States since Great Depression. But there was one thing. United States at that time had people of the scale of FDR, and it wasn't their doormat for Israel, which completely owns American political class. So what can I say? So we then are probably facing something even bigger than Great Depression, and the fact that at that time United States was also ready to kind of disintegrate. We are facing what I described in the third book of mine, disintegration. And it does not necessarily starts with the geographic disintegration. United States, as it exists today, it's not a unified nation. It is at least three different nations or clusters, and the contradictions run deeply, not only because of the systemic crisis of the financial capitalism, which produces primarily bubbles and nothing of substance, but it is obviously the issue of the ideological and class divisions. You know, so, and that's what we observe. Where this country will go, I don't know.
Can we understand the policy of Israeli lobbying the United States and their policy toward Ukraine?
Well, I mean, there are many neocons, not all of them are Jewish, but there are very many Jewish people who have, you know, they have this fixation with setting the accounts with Russia for all different reasons. Some of them have been from Russian Empire and they cannot forgive those, you know, pogroms, which were happening primarily in Ukraine, present-day Ukraine, and Moldova. So others are Trotskyists and they are the heirs of the Trotskyists whom Stalin purged. So they lied to the United States about the whole situation for so long that at this stage it becomes almost, natural for them to wish, Russians to be dead. And you saw yourself how they operate on the, if you look at Israel, it's just genocidal people, so they wouldn't mind, killing as many Russians as possible and, kill children, women. That's what they do. That's precisely because they are weak and they are very spiteful people and they are very uneducated. So, and that's who runs the United States today.
And right now in the European Union, it seems that they're living some sort of confusion. They don't know who's going to be in power in the United States. That's why they have to adjust their policies in Ukraine. How do you find the situation right now in the European Union?
They are inconsequential. They literally are inconsequential. So they can adjust whatever they want. I mean, they are inconsequential against the backdrop of what is transpiring and of which I was warning for 10 years. Don't go to Russia, don't do that. So because the whole thing will go kaboom. And guess what? It is going kaboom. And suddenly Europe finds itself being irrelevant, apart from the fact that after Paris Olympics, and especially the triathlon people vomiting and having diarrhea after swimming in Seine, then a river, in Paris. So what can I say? That's pretty much the embodiment of the whole situation. Nobody cares how they will adjust their policies. They are slaves of the United States and United States. It's already consuming them. It will consume them until they become third world, which is already happening. There are many places in France or Germany which are downright third world. There will be slums, there will be paupers, there will be, and I'm sorry to say it, yeah, there will be huge issues, So Europe chose it, it was European choice. Nobody cares of them. Russians want the Iron Curtain now with them, which I cannot blame them.
Hungary, it seems that Hungary is having some sort of problems because the Russian gas and oil is not getting there. And it's and on the other hand, you see that the European Union doesn't care what's going on right now in Hungary or Slovakia, and they're not just pretending that they're going to help them.
No, European Union is doomed. It's just a matter of time when they will disintegrate because obviously there are all kinds of the divisions there. But the point is, as I already stated, these are people, when you look the European elites, they are downright imbeciles. So be that Macron, be that Scholz or whoever, you have all those Russophobes and globalist well boys, who never, again, as I already stated, held any real job. They are primarily WEF, World Economic Forum, Schwab's, products. So you cannot talk to those people. You just literally cannot talk. For example, in Germany, though, they are so brainwashed, they think that they are for the finally Germany is joined into some kind of the right, good war against, this Russian Mordor. So they made their choices. It's what they are. And you cannot change. It's my video today is about the military industrial DNA. You cannot change European cultural DNA. You just can't. And what is happening right now? Do you see many protests there? No, because majority of Europeans are fine with this. And it's, I don't know how large majority, but majority and sufficient enough to keep those people, pretty much, if not happy, but at least in agreement with the policies of the European Union and European Commission. And that's why you cannot talk to those people, because not only they are homicidal, they are also suicidal. You look at Germany or you look at France, this is how countries commit suicide. And they already committed it. It's just a matter of now, time of how the corpse will basically decompose. And that's exactly what is happening in Europe. Plus, United States helps, obviously.
It seems that the way that the United States is sending missiles to Germany and to Norway, to all these countries, their plan for the future of Europe is not just letting them have any sort of connection with Russia,
Yeah.
because that would be huge for the economy of Europe. We know that. More than
Oh,
2 years
yeah,
of this conflict, it
it's
shows.
already huge. It's already huge. Their industries are collapsing. If you look even at the JP Morgan recent report on the PMI about this industrial thing, practically all European Union headed by Germany, which is the last place, they are negative. They are shrinking, and they will be annihilated. Well, there is a problem with the American plan, which is essentially the Morgenthau plan, the different kind of thing, and but they really misunderstood the scale of BRICS. They literally thought that there are people in Washington, and especially in the so-called among American intellectuals, most of who are not intellectuals, they are just brainwashed, parrots who repeat all kinds of the garbage, So they still think that the United States is so huge economically. It's a large economy, no doubt about it. But the point is that it's nowhere near what it was in 70s and 80s. And financially it's a ruin, it's a bankrupt country. So, and when they begin to now kind of touch for the first time the scale of BRICS, when they suddenly recognize what the Russian economy is or what China's economy is, which is the by far largest economy in the world, it literally dwarfs the economy of the United States. So they suddenly begin to look at, oh my God, we don't have proper armed forces, we don't have proper industries. Well, that's your ideology, guys. You wanted this so-called, democratic capitalism, which was nothing more than monetarism and financial capitalism, which ate the body of the country from the inside. And there you go. So we have now what? There was a milestone 2 days ago. Now it's officially $35 trillion national debt. So count the percentages for the current interest rate. How are you going to service it? You don't have enough budget to service it. Yet they continue to, it's just complete, mess. It is just complete political, economic, military mess. And so they suddenly have to, come to the realization and face the real history and real facts of the practical geopolitics.
Yeah, but when we saw these political changes in the European Union, we thought that that would bring some sort of changes in Europe. It seems right now we can say that nothing gonna change. Is that the case?
Yeah, nothing gonna change. No, they will. Scholz wants to run, for example, again for the chancellor. Guess what? They will elect him. The Macron. Hello, I mean, these guys in France. They thought, and they say, oh yeah, there were those, middle-aged women who, who voted for him. Well, I'm sorry, but they did, and he crushed Marine Le Pen in a poll, not polls, in the election last time. So guess what? I don't know if he is allowed to run again, but I mean, they will, just they will not let power go. And yeah, those people in Europe, majority of them, as I already stated, again, I don't know how large, but it's majority, 70, 75%, they are in agreement. They have new generation which is confused about who they are, man or woman, and they are confused on every single thing, and they all have them, humanities degree, humanities degrees, which are absolutely useless in the modern world. So there you go. And what do you expect from those people? So more pride parades, that's pretty much what is, we already saw the opening of the Paris Olympics. So there you go. That's Europe's future. And until, of course, Islam kicks in and they will put the Sharia laws in place and they will corral them into, which is one of the scenarios. Is it possible? Oh, absolutely possible. They are more passionate. They could organize. And guess what? Unlike all those, bourgeois in France, they can get, for example, weapons, which are already there through, guess what? Special military operation, Ukrainians sell them in industrial quantities on the black market. There you go.
Andrei, in your opinion, Zelensky recently was talking about having a second peace summit. Do you think right now, in the eyes of Russian, is that possible to have any sort of negotiations at this stage of the conflict in Ukraine?
Well, no, it's all posturing. No, I mean, United States probably would love now to talk, but again, the moment anything is initiated, By the United States. Okay, Zelensky is not his puppet. He obviously does what he's told, and now obviously he's told several different things because Washington itself and the United States is non-governed. And nobody in Washington, D.C. knows how to govern the country. And it's a more metaphysical and profound problem than just merely, statecraft. And so the moment United States pushes for any negotiations is that basically it's the moment that they surrender, because Russians, as they are on record all the time, we're ready to talk, but without any preconditions and recognizing all the reality on the ground. And recognizing of the reality of the ground is the new, which are already de facto regions of Russian Federation to the administrative borders of 1991. And possibly, Morgenthau plan for Ukraine. It already doesn't have industries, but it will be deindustrialized even more, only with the some energy left for them in agriculture. Probably about 70,000 police force with light arms. That's about it. That will be it.
Yeah. Right now, how about Odessa and Nikolaev, Andrei? We've talked about Odessa and Nikolaev various times, and right now, how do you find the situation of these two important cities?
I think so. When it comes to some kind of negotiations, Russians will do the trick of the tail, so to speak, which, they will say, yeah, whatever will be left of Ukraine. First, you're not NATO. If you want to go to European Union, be our guest. Who needs you? But the point is that will be set up as confederation, most likely, sort of the autonomous regions. And guess what? Russians are not in hurry to get Odessa or Nikolaev. You know why? Because why do you need to take again on your balance very many people who hate you? Russia already had got itself burned with accepting all of those people of those new territories into a Russian Federation, which of course, by doing this, Russia imported huge number of the what sleeper cells and all kinds of people who absolutely hate Russian gods. So that will be very different now. And so they probably will set up such thing that there will be autonomous regions with the ability to eventually vote for its independence, which automatically means what? They will become some kind of the statelets, and then they will go the same way as Donbass went, Zaporozhye and Kherson. So that's pretty much it. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this session, Andrei, recently we had a great event in St. Petersburg in which Chinese ships, Indian, they were all there and couldn't even talk with the people and send a message to the West. What was the message that Putin tried to send to the West?
Well, the message is very simple. First, militarily, BRICS and what will emerge, more as the security organization, which is Shanghai Cooperation Organization, in terms of the military potential, it's overwhelming military power. So, especially when actually, India has its own ways of doing things. It's a huge country, and they need to settle some things, which is good. They are doing this with China. They once the whole thing breaks and Shanghai Cooperation Organization emerges, that will be the dominant military, political, and economic force in the world. And a Russian Navy Day was demonstration that, yeah. Look at this, and all those things are extremely well armed. Let's put it this way. They are really, really well armed, and I'm talking about they're better armed than anything else there out there. And so that's the message that it's over for the reign of the West, as it was in the last 500 years. It's over. American hegemony, well, turned out to be primarily, myth. It was primarily through institutions, World Bank, United Nations, like International Olympic Committees. United States controlled most of those institutions, and that's how it was pretending to be the foremost military power. It is not. That's the issue. And now, when you see that exposition and parading of this military power, that's the message is, don't tread on me, and that's pretty much was well received, I think.
Yeah, it seems that as time goes by, the unity within BRICS is getting better and better, not and the way that the United States tried to separate India from BRICS doesn't work, it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, India certainly has the real interest in Eurasia, no doubt about it. And while definitely they are trading country and they still have a long ways to go to become a genuine superpower, but they are trying definitely. And again, it's the Indian way. They're a big country. They're a big civilization, actually. They're more than just a country. And for all its failures, and there are many failures in India, no doubt about it. So, they are an important player in BRICS. They understand it, and they understand that, it's going to be their position of three equals, essentially, China, Russia, and India. Hey, it's a very nice position to be, founding three of this huge, economic, political, and military bloc. Hey, you know what? India wasn't the part and is not the part of United Nations Security Council. Well, how about now, when essentially everybody knows United Nations is a completely corrupt organization and BRICS is emerging as the alternative, the international body? Then India feeling like, hey, we have been there, from the get-go, and we're big, which they are, voice here. Hey, it's a very prestigious, position. You cannot deny the national prestige of being these three huge countries with this such powerful militaries. And, so yeah, it's important. I think so. They understand this. Plus, of course, yeah, Eurasian market.
I think for all of this conflict in Ukraine, in the Middle East, in Africa, the solution is in the East, not in the West.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's
So yeah,
getting
nobody
done.
cares about what the West says anymore. And again, Russians view the West, combined West, with contempt. It's just like lowlife, literally, So while Russia still is open and it's receiving and accepting a significant number of Europeans and Americans who want to immigrate to Russia, because obviously what is happening in the West, especially in Europe, it is a complete insanity. It just absolute insanity. And yeah, like this French journalist, after the opening ceremony of Paris Olympics, he's asked for the political asylum. He was granted. So, I mean, yeah, who would want to live there? I mean, these are not normal people. They tolerate it. Many of them like it. So, and let them, whatever will happen to them, who cares?
Thank you so much, Andre, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
My pleasure. Anytime.
See you soon. Bye-bye.